Hey guys, if you are a father who would like to have a deeper relationship with your son, if you have a son that you're trying to pour into and develop, if you want to help your son see the greatness that you know he has in his life, I've got a very special event coming up June 23rd through 27th. We are going to be in Cleveland National Forest. My father's coming with me, the man who you hear me talk about all the time, who helped me become who I've become in life. We're going to be doing a father-son rite of passage event, map and compass, land navigation. I'll be teaching you how to use map and compass in the exact same place that I learned in Navy SEAL training. This is going to be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. You'll have these memories for the rest of your life. If you want to find out more, you can click the link in the description below. We've only got 16 spots available, and we've already sold a few of those. You can find out more at theimpossible.life/legacynavigators. Story's a list of facts, but it's the facts and the order and priority that you give to them. It's the meaning that you give to those facts. Right? Because there's stories about everything. There's stories about your life. There's stories about the life of Christ. There's stories about America, right? Think about some of the conflicting stories of America in today's society, right? They talk about the same facts, but they give different meaning to them, different priority to them. Same history line, same facts, but they tell different stories, right? So that's what a story is. It's a list of facts in the order and priority you give to them.
That's impossible.
Let me tell you what I believe.
But your weakness is not your technique.
Don't think you are. Know you are.
The Impossible Life Podcast.
Man, you're sitting on a winning lottery ticket.
An idea that is fully formed, fully understood, that sticks.
This is the Impossible Life Podcast because Nick and I are attempting to live impossible lives. What we know is that nothing is impossible. So instead of using impossible as an excuse to not try, we'll use the pursuit of impossible as an accelerant for greatness. If something's never been done before, that just means it's unexplored. If they tell you it's too hard, it's just waiting to be simplified. Impossible is a default label used by uncourageous people unwilling to take a risk. The real truth is this. The solution to any impossible task starts with this question. If I had to, what would it take?
Welcome to another episode of the Impossible Life Podcast. I'm your co-host, Nick Surfers, and I'm looking across at a man who lists Magnum PI as a reference on job applications. That's right, friends. The former Navy SEAL. Garrett Unkelbach, a man who dreams of a Hawaiian shirt and a Ferrari for his retirement. Now, random intro there, right?
If Magnum was on my job references, which, you know, if I was applying for a job, I wouldn't have to give job references. They would have heard about me from these people already.
And then
would be reaching
out.
Is
that how it works?
Yeah, that's how it works in this imaginary story that we're telling. Yeah. But in this imaginary story, who else would my job references be?
I mean, I can only imagine. Perhaps Jesus. You definitely have like Jesus, Katy Perry, and you know, maybe some
Han
guy
Solo.
You went to high school with. Yeah, Han Solo and Josh Kraft. That would be your job references. Now you're probably like, what, these guys are on a little bit of a crazy one today. Let me tell you why I gave that intro. So, you know, I hang out with Garrett a lot these days. We were just doing something we were doing for our business. We were having a business planning day, and we were meeting some people, and I was talking to somebody else. We were stood in a group of five people. And just randomly, I heard Garrett. I saw this woman that was a private investigator start to hug Garrett, and I heard her go, "Oh, you're one of us." And he was, like, showing her his wallet. And I was like, I just kind of filed it away in my brain for later. And I was, like, continuing my conversation, went back and sat down. I was like, dude, did I hear correctly that you're a private investigator? He's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm a PI. I'm like, really? Like, okay. That's a little small piece. I mean, not that you would lead with that, but, you know, he had his little badge and everything, man.
You who knows how many private investigators you've met?
Yeah, I mean, well, clearly they don't identify
private
themselves. Yeah.
Investigator.
You put the private PI. Good job.
You don't walk around telling everyone. Well,
the way Garrett describes his PI badge is that it just means that his opinion means more in court, which I quickly pointed out to him. Like, he thinks his opinions mean more anyways. So, you know, this badge just sort of officially agreed with what he already thought about himself. So that was pretty pretty special. Nothing. Wow, yeah. Nothing. He just smiles. I hope I didn't, like, are you not allowed for people to know that you're PI?
No, it's fine.
Okay, I wasn't sure if this was like, you know, telling everybody that someone's in the CIA or something. You're not allowed to do it. Anyways, today's episode is a unique one. I don't think we've ever done an episode like this. I think the closest one we've done is the fated first ever hunting trip that we did. I think it was now, what, almost a year and a half ago, whenever we got that crazy storm.
Your children's favorite story.
Yeah, and that's kind of what sparked this. If you ask my kids, if you listen to my kids tell their...
Who knew how much that cat would pay off for us?
Yeah, well, it paid off for some people. If you ask my kids what my podcast is about, and they'll tell their friends, like, oh, my dad's on this podcast. He gets peed on by a cat. That's like how they describe our podcast, which is very painful for me because...
If you've listened to more than one episode of this podcast, you
know what we're talking about. If you go back to, it's early January of 2023, it's called How to Reverse a Snowball, I believe is the episode, and you can find it. And this is when we went hunting, and if you're ever... feel like things are falling apart in your life. It's a great episode.
There's a lot of comedy in that episode, but it's actually, there's some great lessons.
Right. And that was what sparked this, was I was just thinking about the power of story. I mean, so story is, today's episode is three stories and three lessons, okay? And this is for everybody, but like the power of story is so universal. If you have kids, what do you do right before bed or at some point during the day? You read them stories. When you were growing up, you most likely had that. We have multi-billion dollar entertainment industries that just tell stories, right?
We've talked about this before, but really what stories are, stories is a list of facts, but it's the facts and the order and priority that you give to them.
Right.
It's the meaning that you give to those facts.
Right.
Right, because there's stories about everything. There's stories about your life. There's stories about the life of Christ. There's stories about America. Right, think about some of the conflicting stories of America today's society. Right,
yeah,
they talk about the same facts, but they give different meaning to them, different priority to them. Hmm. Right, there's the same history line, same facts, but they tell different stories.
Yeah,
right. So that's what a story is. It's a list of facts and the order and priority you give to them.
Yeah, and the thing that we want to point out, before we get into the three stories that we have, and you will enjoy them, by the way, because there's always a little bit of fun in there, and also, of course, since it's Garrett, there's going to be a lot of intensity, that, like, you have a story in your life. And like Garrett said, think about the order and priority that you have. I would ask everybody out there, what story are you telling yourself about your life at all times? Because exactly what Garrett said, you can prioritize things and put them in different orders and tell a very, very different story. So if you're leading all the time with all your failures or the things that other people said about you or what you didn't have, I'm going to go ahead and guess that you're not telling yourself a victorious story. And you're probably putting a big barrier up in your mind.
You'll continue to build on that story because, as you talk about, Nick, your reticular activation system finds what it's looking for.
That's exactly right.
Right. So if you think nothing works out for you, you'll find all of the evidence to support that and continue to write that story.
Yeah, the mind is, that's such a great point, G. The mind is an amazing thing. Whatever you tell it's important, it'll be like, okay. And it's not there to tell you the truth. It's there to reinforce what you're looking for, which can be scary, but that's why it's so important to take hold of your story. So we did an episode, I don't even remember when it was, but it was on takeaways. And that was an early episode. And takeaways are massively important. I think we called it the chapter titles of your life, which was what we titled the episode. Right. And because that's really what it is. And I didn't really come into a takeaway. I didn't even know really what takeaways were. In England, they call takeaways when you get, food. So it's like, oh, I got takeaway, which means you took it out, me fish and chips, isn't it?
Gotcha.
All right. Okay. Not even, come on, man. All right. Garrett literally just blanked me as I was doing my British accent. Normally, he at least has a glint in his eye. He just stared at me like, keep going. But yeah, so takeaways. Why don't you explain this? Because you grew up in a takeaway culture, and I don't know that a lot of people have this.
Well, really, simply what a takeaway is, just like you would go to a restaurant and eat a meal, and then you would take away some leftovers in the same context, right? You go through events in life, whether you go, you can have a takeaway from a moment, you can have a takeaway from a season, but you should, whatever your reflection cadence is, right, and the significance of events in your life, you've got to have a stop and a reflection point and look back and say, what was my takeaway from that?
Yeah.
Right? You sit in church on a Sunday and you walk out the door. What's your takeaway?
Mm-hmm.
Did you get anything out of that? Because it's the principle of communication, what is sent is not always what's received. And in that same context, it's not about what was spoken, but it's about what was heard.
Right.
It's not about what happened, but it's about what you took away from it.
Yeah.
Right. So a takeaway is a lesson. It's the growth that you took from anything in your life. Otherwise, you'll just go from thing to thing to life, in life, season to season, relationship to relationship, job to job, and nothing's changed for you because you've got no takeaway.
Yeah. And as your mentor and mine said, Pastor Keith Kraft, he said that you never lose when you learn. And I think when you have a takeaway mentality and you have a takeaway practice, You can go through the difficult things. You can learn from losing, and you come out better all the time. But it's not just from losing. It's not only when bad things happen. You can look at the high points of things, reflect, and I just find, like, one of my favorite scriptures, it says, wisdom will multiply your days and add years to your life. It's in Proverbs. And I love it because it's saying it's going to multiply your days and add years to your life. So they're two different things. They're not saying, oh, multiply your days, like make you live longer. They say that in the second part. How do you multiply days? You get more out of them than most people, right? I mean, right. You talked about multiplying time. I can live a day and reflect on it, and that day can serve me for months and years because right. I got better from it.
You also have days that you forgot and nothing seemed because you don't think anything significant right. happened, or you didn't have a takeaway from it. It was a day that almost didn't happen for you.
Yeah, and so I have a folder on my phone in my notes section called Takeaways. I am always adding to it. I actually, when we were in Chicago last week with Joe shared something with us about how to honor people who are mentors in your life. I put that in my phone. That was a takeaway because I was like, you know what? That's something valuable that I want to make sure I hang on to. And so I do this all the time. When you reflect on this, what starts to develop as well is you take hold of the narrative, which became a very popular phrase, like, oh, you know, manage the narrative in 2020, whenever all the craziness was going on with COVID and all the racism and all the things we had going on in our country. But in our own lives, we've got to manage the narrative as well. Because like we talked about earlier, if you keep going like, oh man, I lost again, or you're just, you know, you're not taking time to be introspective, to reflect, to really grow and learn from takeaways, your story, I mean,
the difference between narrative and story is really, narrative is like, think like you have a narrator, someone who is, these are events, but he's characterizing it. And that's what a narrative is. It's a characterized story that there's a, from where we are, the narrator's taking us somewhere. Mm-hmm. And a narrative is with your life, where's it going?
Right.
Right. Yeah, that there's an intentional direction. That's the difference between, you know, a story can be just what happens to you.
Right.
You can tell the story of what happened to you. But when there's a narrative, that means the story's going somewhere.
Exactly. And I would say both you and I have a very positive narrative about our lives. I mean, when people ask you how you're doing, what do you say?
Any Christ follower should.
Yeah.
Right. When you have if you may not know what's in the middle. Very few do.
Right.
Right. But you know where you are and you know what the end is. You have an eternal context. So everyone should have a positive narrative. Everyone should have a faith narrative if you're a follower of Christ. To have a negative narrative on your life and be a follower of Christ, those two things shouldn't be able to go together.
Yeah. I mean, we say the best is yet to come all the time. And what do you say every time someone says, hey, how are you?
When somebody asks me how I'm doing, I say I'm wonderfully well and blessed and highly favored of the Lord.
Including our Uber driver in Chicago. So he was like, oh, he didn't really know how to respond to that, but I appreciate
that. And if I'm feeling extra froggy, I'll say I'm breath in my lungs and full of purpose.
Yeah. And that also is a great conversation starter. So there's a little bonus nuggets for you. All right, G, let's get into the stories. Because I, for as many stories as I've heard you tell, there's like, this is the thing about the private investigator. There's always like, I feel like you're a, like the files are hidden in the computer, right? Like you've just got like files of stories locked in your brain.
There's layers.
Layers and layers. And you told one when we were prepping for this, I was like, I've never heard that. And that's really interesting to me, which is the story we're going to tell first. So why don't you go ahead and share that with everybody, G?
Yeah, so again, we're talking about stories today. And I will say this isn't like, I told Nick, I said, this is pretty backwards to the way that I normally do things. I never really just like, all right, story time, gather around. If you try to prompt me in that way, I'll just stare back at you.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell a story?
I once asked Garrett, I was like, dude, why do you always talk about training? And like, you've done a lot of cool stuff on missions, because he'll tell me some of the stuff sometimes. I'm like, why don't you ever share that? He's like, because there's no purpose to that story. It's just like, oh, you guys went in there and accomplished your mission, whatever.
Threw a pass. We caught it.
Yeah.
It was cool.
Which to him is like a standard day. I'm like, dude, most people will never experience what you just shared. So I say all that to say, use your stories for a purpose.
A lot of the great lessons are from training, because that's where those were learning moments.
Right.
big learning moment for me. This was early on in training. This is in first phase. This is actually during Hell Week. This is actually two stories I'm going to put together. This is in the beginning of Hell Week. Hell Week is early on in first phase of the first 6 months of SEAL training, which is, you know, just 180 brutal days in a row. And Hell Week starts on Sunday night, goes till Friday afternoon. You're awake the entire time except for 1 hour on Wednesday and 1 hour on Thursday, which they determined was necessary to prevent brain damage. So, you know, just above the brain damage line of sleep deprivation. All right, we're doing good. It's a great start to an event. So anyways, Hell Week's a very difficult event. I won't belabor that point. But we were doing this evolution during Hell Week. You've probably heard of surf torture, where they'll put us in the water. And they've tried to change the name on that. because
really?
You know,
the PC gang got to the
Well, I mean, that's what it is on paper,
right?
But it's still surf torture, which is essentially just going to put you in the cold water until you're, you know, almost to the fatal point of hypothermic, and then we'll warm you up.
Great.
This is kind of like a parallel evolution to surf torture. This thing called rocking chair. So imagine if you've ever been to the beach on the West Coast, right? It's pretty cool water.
It's
nice and cold, especially depending on what time of year you are. A little bit different if you're, I haven't been to every beach on the East Coast, but a lot of beaches on the East Coast are a little bit more flat.
Right.
There's a lot more cliffs and steep beaches on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. Right. And there in San Diego, a lot of times where the water comes in up into the soft sand, it's a pretty steep angle.
Always. Yeah.
Right. And so just imagine that your feet are towards the beach and your head's towards the water. So you're already at kind of like a downward angle,
mm-hmm.
right? Your head's pointed down, which isn't great if you got water pouring over your face.
Right.
And this is what they'll have you do, where your feet are up on the sand and every time the waves come in, every time the tide comes in, water's going up over your face. And they do this thing called rocking chairs, where when they'll get the evolution started, and then they'll just make a beep sound on the bullhorn. And every time you hear a beep, you have to take think you're laying on your back, kick your toes up, and touch your toes behind your head.
Right.
Right. So you don't have to be super flexible for that. I mean,
you're inverted. So you're already laying with your feet higher.
Your hips are
going to
come
head.
Off the ground. Right. But just imagine, you know, whether your hamstrings are loose or tight, you're going to kick you're going to touch your toes behind your head. So yeah, you're pretty inverted. My toddler seems to make this look really easy. She does it all the time.
That's because she doesn't have the ocean splashing over her face while she's upside down.
So anyways, that's what you're doing. And we would do this sometimes for 30 minutes, for an hour, and do hundreds of rocking chairs. And there were some guys that just absolutely hated it because it's really uncomfortable because you'll start getting a bunch of water and sand up your nose, and it's surf torture.
Yeah,
what it is.
Purposely unpleasant.
So we were doing this exercise in Hell Week, and I would say there's parts of it that I found kind of relaxing, mm-hmm. just because eventually you're when you sit in that portion of the tide, your ears fill up with sand.
Oh my.
Like packed tight.
That's crazy.
With sand. Because you know this from the West Coast beach, right? Like the thick grit sand will fall down. Mm-hmm. But in that like foamy water, mm-hmm. there's the light sand that floats, and it just fills up in your ears. And it'll just get packed in there. And it's almost like you have earplugs in after a while and you can't hear anything. So it's just like super quiet. You can tell when it starts to stop up your ears because the bullhorn doesn't sound near as loud as it did before.
That's
And your eyes are closed, right? So it's just eyes are closed. You know, it's like you're cold, but it's like a form of sensory deprivation.
Right.
Right. And you're kind of really in your head. I guess that's a dark place for some people. But anyways, we were doing this evolution over and over again, and we were at hundreds of rocking chairs. And I just felt like someone just grabbed my arm and yanked me up out of the water. And I'm like, oh no, what is going on
you're
right
in trouble.
Now?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it took me a second because the same way that sand fills up your ears, it fills up your eyes, even though your eyes are closed.
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't hurt too bad. But then when you try to open your eyes, you realize there was all this sand underneath your eyelids, right? Like you can't see. It takes a while to be able to see again. And I can't, and they're yelling at me and I can't hear. I'm trying to get like the sand out of my ears. And I thought he was trying to talk to me, and he was saying, just watch. He's trying to turn me around. He wanted me to see my class, right? One instructor, just we'd been doing this evolution for almost an hour, comes and grabs me out of the water, just pulls me. The class keeps going, and just wants me to see what's been happening. For almost an hour, I've just been kicking my feet back, touching my toes. Like I'm in my mind, I'm like, just get it over with,
right?
Right. If you do it really quick, like if you like just quick tap your toes behind your head and then bring your feet back down, your head doesn't get too inverted,
right?
And I would just blow out my nose for a second, right, to not get a bunch of water at my nose and just get it over with.
Do they make you put your arms behind your back?
you're holding arms with other people.
Oh, right. So yes, as long as you can wipe the sand out of your eyes.
Yeah, you're holding you're locked arms with other people, so the class doesn't just spread out all over the place. And also the tide would like spin you around and everything. So being linked together kind of keeps us all facing one direction. But anyways, I've done hundreds of these just really quickly, kick my feet behind my head and stand me back up and wait for the next one. Well, the instructor pulls me out of the water, stands me up there on the beach, says, I just want you to watch this. And they keep going and they're hitting the bullhorn, and I'm looking at my class and I was shocked. Right. Cause you've got to understand, from my position, I'm not one of the top performers in the class. I'm bottom third on, the only thing I was good at was the obstacle course.
Right.
I was middle of the pack on swims and bottom of the class on 4-mile timed runs. And those are the three ranked events. So I'm top at one event, bottom at the other event, middle at the other event. And there's plenty of guys that are like top 20 at everything.
Right.
You know, and everyone notices them, right? And you always get noticed for being bottom at anything. And right. So people notice me for being one of the slowest runners in the class. And so that's part of the way I saw myself too. I was like, you know what? I'm really good at the O course, but I'm not that good at some of this other stuff. Anyways, I say that to say, I was shocked to see my class, like out of, you know, 40 people left or 45 people left in the class, they would hit the bullhorn. A couple people would kick their toes behind their head. Some people's like toes would just like get close to behind their head, but wouldn't actually hit the sand. You had some people whose like feet are like straight up in the air and like one leg's going back. Huh. It was just kind of a gaggle, honestly. And I was shocked by that because I felt I, at that moment, the way that it looked, it was like I had been the only one doing that exercise.
Right.
And that was why that I remember I talked to that instructor years later. I was like, do you remember this? And he did. And we talked about it. But that was just it was a shocking moment for me. And this happened another time later in my career. Again, I was never really one of the top performers. I was a lot in many events. I was just middle of the pack. But later on in SQT, this is almost 2 years later, a year and a half later, we're doing dive training. And we're near the end of the dive training for SQT. So I'd already finished BUDS. These are all, once you finish BUDS, it's like 95% of students go on to become SEALs. So this is really just, it's the qualification training.
Right.
Like, let's get you, it's time to learn some stuff. So we're in the learning portion of diving. And we're on our FTX, final training exercise. And one of our FTXs was, I was showing this to Nick on the map earlier. If you're familiar with San Diego, we were in Mission Bay.
Right.
Right. And just area in Mission Bay where the ocean, well, the bay turns in, Mission Bay turns into like this little river. It's like a drainage creek. And the street goes right over it. And we were from way out in the middle of the bay to swim all the way up into this little channel and surface out of the water. And we were swimming a bag with us to change out of our dive gear and all of our SEAL gear into civilian clothes, stash all of our dive gear under the bridge, and then just like casually pop out on the sidewalk and go get a burger. Like right. there's a joint down the road, and we just walk down there, get a burger, and then come back, change into our dive gear.
This was your training exercise.
This was the actual.
You said it was OTB. They're trying to make it sound like you're behind the boundary
OTB
line.
OTB is over the beach.
Right.
The transitions is the hard part.
Right.
It actually is like not a fun. The fun part was getting a burger.
Right.
And then you finish the burger and realize like, I got to get back in the water.
Right.
how do I quit? Where's the bell?
Yeah.
It's something we would joke about in SQT all the time. Like, where's the bell?
Right.
Because there was no.
Yeah.
The bell follows you around in BUDS, but in SQT, there's so many times when you want to quit because it sucks. And it's like, where's the bell? There's no bell to be found. So anyways, then we went back and changed into our dive gear, which, you know, it went from fun to unfun really fast. Like, go from you're just now starting to get dry, and you stand out. You think you don't stand out, but you stand out. You're all wet and everything.
I was going to say, yeah. So just for those people that maybe didn't grasp this, your training exercise, and for those of you who are familiar with San Diego, this is Grand Avenue and in Pacific Beach. Maybe you don't know it, this is a very, very busy area. Like PB is where you go to if you don't want to go to college, but you want to party like you're in college and you're like 18.
That's true.
That's what you do. You go live in PB and you basically just like, you know, spend a bunch of years of your life.
There's a bunch of
until you grow up.
40-year-old, 20-year-olds in
yeah,
PB.
There's that too. But that's what PB is known for. And Grand Avenue is like the main drag. This is not like a small side street. So when Garrett told me that they go and they stash their stuff under a bridge and then just like come up and go get a burger, this was miraculous to me because I'm like, wait, you just switch clothes? You know, I'm trying to think how to give another example, but imagine someone just shows up like in your mall and they're soaking wet.
You never
wet,
know where somebody came from.
And they just came out and you're like, why is that dude all wet? But like, he's dressed normal. Okay, whatever. And oh yeah, he's also, you know, black ops, like Navy SEAL. Like, you know, you just would never guess all that.
That's the reality version of a TV moment.
Right.
But anyways.
Yeah, seriously.
So we finished this dive. You know, this was like, we're getting close to the end of SEAL training. Everybody in the class is close to becoming a SEAL. I'm pretty sure, if I'm thinking clearly, everybody that I remember from that FT, that we all went on to become SEALs. But we finished the exercise and we get back. And the instructors are like, this was, we had two FTXs. This was one of them. And everyone, almost everyone completed the dive. There were a couple fails. But the instructors were pissed And we're like, what did we do? We all thought, you know, when we're back in the boat and everyone's, because, man, you're just always like 1 inch away from a nasty beating.
Right.
And you're always just doing kind of like a pulse, like, where are we at? Like, right. am I going home tonight? What's this night going to look like? And, you know, just talking around in the boats, everyone's like, okay, I passed. Like, okay, wait, this should be a good evening. And we get back and the instructors are pissed, and they were all pissed. Well, I remember the first thing they did was we get back and they're like, okay, everyone drop your rigs, right? Because our dive gear is like really expensive.
Yeah.
Like, drop your rig, get back in the water. Right. So we're on the bay there in Naval Amphib Base, and they just make everyone get back in the water and just start treading water. And like, this is what you do to bud students.
Right.
And so we're like, man, this evening is going to be great. And they're talking to us for about 5 minutes. And then they say, Uncle Bach Cohen, right? That was my swim pair. I was diving with an officer, Mr. Cohen, that day. Uncle Bach Cohen, get out of the water, right? And come up here. And one of the other instructors talked to us. And he's like, you guys can just stand here and listen, right? And so the instructor went on to say, like, he was furious because he was the one checking in pairs as they got out of the water. Because this event was not just a dive event, but it was a covert event.
Right.
Right. So it wasn't just the dive, but you had to get out of the water, change clothes, and then, you know, go to the burger joint, come back. And he was furious because every pair in the class, as soon as they came up out of the water, was just like, you know, making noise and joking around like they had passed the dive.
Right.
Right. Because up until this point, a lot of our training had been that, like, we're doing functional testing, right? Can you navigate correctly? But it wasn't necessarily an operation. And this was a training exercise, right? And so you're treating it like it's the real deal. And he was just furious because everyone came up out of the water and was just, you know, messing around, right? Like, oh, we passed the dive. Good for us. Let's go get a burger. Like, you know, we're such cool guys.
Yeah.
Right. And acting like a bunch of cool guys, which is sometimes a derogatory term. But the only reason that he called Uncle Bach and Cohen out is because we didn't do that. We were the one pair that didn't do that. And I could say, you know, Cohen, I doubt he's listening to this, but Cohen was a lot like me. He didn't have, like, he wasn't a top guy either.
Right.
Right. But I remember standing there talking to one of my friends who was the instructor, Ryan, who prints our shirts.
Oh, nice.
Right. Ryan was the instructor debriefing me on that and saying, and he basically told me, you guys were the only ones that, you know, weren't being a bunch of idiots.
Right.
And I remember standing there watching my class get beat. And thinking, and it reminded me of the time that I had done the rocking chairs. And really some of my, so just to put a pin in these stories, my lesson from both of these stories, but there's been times where I'm not the best performer, right? There's been times where a lot of people have more of a certain type of ability than me,
right.
But I caught it in this moment, like both of these tests where I had been the only one, right? There's been a lot of tests where, you know, everyone gets passed, you know, everyone's a pass, and then we rank everybody. But these were two events where I had been the only one that gets pulled out. Everyone else failed. Garrett was the only one that passed, right? Or in the second event, me and my swim buddy, the only ones that passed. And the context of that pass was that you were doing the right thing when nobody was looking.
Right.
Right. And so that was just like a takeaway for me, right? We're talking about takeaways. That was a takeaway for me from the story to remember, like, what I bring.
Right.
I don't bring the highest amount of talent, but experience showed me the areas where I am valuable.
Right.
Right. And so again, that's the point of understanding your stories. It's a point of having a takeaway is, what does this mean? And so I've given a meaning to that story.
Yeah. Cause you said it was like a time when you really discovered your strengths, and it was like, it gave you a clear picture of yourself of being like, okay, like I remember you said specifically the rocking chair, like I'm supposed to be here when they said like SEALs show up to be trained. You're like, well, that's me. And then the rocking chair kind of reaffirmed that. Right.
Well, so yeah, because there had been, if you listen to my story before, you've heard plenty of evidence, or plenty of parts of my story where I was receiving evidence that I didn't belong there,
right?
Even though I believe that I did. But then you get those little moments that show you that you are supposed to be there.
Yeah.
And those are the ones that I held on to.
Yeah, I love that. And I hope you guys capture that, because I think a lot of people struggle with imposter syndrome, which is like, you know, when you're actually doing something and you're still sitting there telling yourself like, oh, I don't know why I'm here, or I don't belong here. And it's so important, because both of those could have gone by as like, oh man, I slipped by that day.
Yeah.
And that could have been the story you told yourself. And that's the whole point about three lessons, three stories. And really the lesson of all of these are like, it is for you to have a reflection and a takeaway culture. Because when you have that, I mean, think about how powerful and how encouraging that was for you to get pulled out, that you would remember and remind that instructor years later. What did he say, by the way? Did he remember it?
Yeah, the instructor from the beach in first phase. Yeah, he did.
Yeah, what did he say?
I just started telling him the story. He's like, oh yeah, I remember that. That was crazy. Nobody was doing it except for you.
Yeah. But he wasn't trying to encourage you. He was just,
no, he was like, that's not, it was very, very abnormal behavior for an instructor to do something like that. Hmm. The thing was, they're yelling at, like, while you're doing that, they're yelling, they're like, you guys suck. You're not doing what we're telling, but they always say that to you.
Right. So you don't believe them.
Right. So you're just like, you can't see each other.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you can be doing the right thing. And that's what you hear is like, you suck. You're not doing the right thing. But the truth is, a lot of, cause I've been on the other side of that now, where I've gotten to help and assist with Hell Weeks, is, you know, sometimes they're yelling that and it's not for everybody, but it is for some people.
Right.
And in that case, it just happened to be that I'd found a way to make rocking chairs easy, right? Yeah. There's a lot of stuff I wasn't good at, right? I didn't have the athletic ability as some other people did, but I brought what my strengths were, right? Yeah. And I could do rocking chairs.
Now, think if you have imposter syndrome, you assume that everybody else, like you said, you can't see other people. And this is the whole thing about discovering your strengths and about being...
It was crazy for me to see people who could literally run circles around me not do what I could do.
Right.
Right. And it's also, it's like in Ecclesiastes 3, you know, for everything under the sun, like, and everybody has their area. So like even in a group of students where, you know, NCAA athletes, very intelligent people, Harvard, Yale students, you know, people of all different types of abilities, here was an event that was mine.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I love that. Good. All right, well, story two. This one's going to be mine, and it was from a recent trip that Garrett and I took to Chicago, which we also talked about last week. And you, if you listen to this podcast or if you are around us at all, you'll know that Garrett talks about how excellence is one of his core values. And he'll often talk about how he picks me up on it, right? And so I always say to him, like, man, you make me sound like I'm some sort of, like, I'm just mailing it in all the time. Like, I'm excellent and Nick's a turd. And that's not actually what he says. I'm just giving him a hard time, nor is that how he means it. But I had this, the reason I wanted to share this is because I had this really aha moment when I was in Chicago. And it's something that I've been really working through for a while, for much longer than just this past week. Actually, months ago is when I really started having this first takeaway from the 100 mile. I'm going to share it with you. So we're sat in dinner in Chicago, and I was out with my wife recently, and we were celebrating our 19th wedding anniversary. So boom, very proud of that. And, very, very much enjoyed that night with my wife. We went out, we had dinner, we were just hanging out. I was just asking, I was like, hey, what really lights you up? Like, what are the things that, you know, if someone said, here's $20,000 and a night, you go do whatever you want, like, what would you do? And me and my wife are really simple people. Like, if you left to our own devices, we're pretty simple. Like, we'd have dinner, we'd have a movie. Like, just, that was our first date. We don't have, like, a long list of things. Like, I love coffee and a book. I love, you know, coffee and watching Manchester United, even though they're punishing me this season. And, so these simple things. And I remember thinking to myself, I was like, dude, I know a guy who could spend that 14,000 ways and probably already has multiple ideas in his head. And it was Garrett. And so when we were sat in Chicago having dinner, I was asking him questions, and it really dawned on me. Like, I was asking him, I was like, dude, like, why do you like that? Like, why do you like the things you like? Cause Garrett likes nice restaurants. He likes going to places where you can get excellent service, excellent food. He has like a ranking order for, hey, if we're going to do this, like, let's go to this place because it's way better. Like, what was it? The Ritz-Carlton. You love the Ritz-Carlton, right? And so he started talking to me about these things, and I was asking him, I was like, you know, I asked him what the best meal in his life was. Surprisingly, he said a Domino's pizza at the end of Hell Week, which was not the answer I was expecting.
I was just giving you an answer you wouldn't expect.
I know. Well done. But this is where the conversation was going. We were just talking about different things. And I had this realization, like, Garrett likes those things, not because he's trying to flex or he needs those things to be happy, or he's trying to put out some persona like
low needs, right?
Right. Yeah. You pride yourself on having low needs. You've said you want to be just as happy at the Ritz-Carlton as you could be in the desert sleeping in the sand.
I would argue that I might have been even happier sleeping at the base of Mount Massive, getting up at 2:30 in the morning,
we've done
eating my mountain house meal.
Exactly. But the reason that dawned on me was I was listening to what he was talking about, because he was going into detail. You've heard him say it before, like when he goes to a property development, he appreciates all the thought that's gone into it. He notices all the little details.
Well, it's like just give you a small example.
Yeah. Right?
You'll go to hotels. There's a lot of standard behavior, right? And areas that get a lot of traffic, like go down to a large meeting hall for a hotel where there's a lot of traffic, and you'll see wear and tear on the corners of the trim.
Right.
You'll see scuff marks on things. You'll see a lot of stuff that's really that's what people would call acceptable.
Right.
And when I go to places that, They have a lot of traffic, and I don't see any of those things. I'm fascinated by that.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people will just let it get by.
Right.
Right. And you'll see hotels or event spaces that just look worn out, and you'll see ones that are immaculate. And most people don't pay it any attention.
Right.
But I really appreciate those things because I know the level of work it takes to make something look that way.
Right. And when I asked her, I was like, well, why do you like, you know, such and such restaurant? We were talking about favorite restaurants, places to stay. And he said, look, you can get really good food in a lot of places, and there's not a huge difference between one place to another. But what makes this place win for me is the level of service. And you talked about the Ritz-Carlton. You said, hey, there's lots of beautiful properties and hotels you can stay on. But when you're there, the service is just so much better.
And I've stayed at the properties that in the photos look like a Ritz-Carlton.
Right.
And you get there and it's a very different experience.
Right. And so I was listening to all this and it just dawned on me because, like I said to you, the reason I shared about what me and my wife talked about previously is honestly, like I enjoy doing those things. We go eat at some great restaurants and I enjoy them when we do them. I enjoy the food. But like, it's not, you know, if you were to say, hey, here's a night, go do what you want, I don't know that I would go back to those places. Not because I didn't enjoy them, but because it's not what I value. And that's when it really stood out to me, because I was thinking, I was like, you're drawn to all those things because it's what you value. And
you've seen me go to nice places, and I'm never rude about it, but I'll give you my opinion on a place that's like, a lot of people would call it a 5-star place, and I'll say, I'll never go back there.
Right.
It's not worth the money.
Think about that French restaurant we went to, for example.
Oh, I was so angry.
You were angry. But the point I'm making is it really dawned on me, and because Garrett always talks about your core values are what you value, and it's how you add value. And this was the takeaway that I had that I wanted to share with everybody. You may be trying to discover your core values. You may be in a place where you've got some core values, or maybe you're in a place where you don't even understand them. What I realized was, like, what you're attracted to is what you value. Because the complete opposite side of this, I talked about the 100-miler because this dawned on me. I said to Garrett, if someone asked me to list out the list of accomplishments in my life, I don't know that I would remember to say that I've run a 100-mile ultra marathon.
Right.
And I don't say that arrogantly. I don't say that disrespectfully to anybody who runs them all the time, because it's brutal. Like, I have respect for people who do those things because I know the difficulty level. And we did ours in 33 hours. There's people that do them in like 16 and 20. And that to me is just crazy.
Nuts.
But why wouldn't I remember that? Because I don't value those things. We talked about this before. When I saw the power team when I was a kid, Pastor Keith was on the power team. And for you, you were like, man, I want to get built. I want to hit the weights. I watched those guys and I was like, wow, that was amazing. I was never like, hey, I should go try and do that. I've never looked at like The Rock, who I have respect for, and thought, man, I wish I had muscles like him. But you know who the guys that make me go like, man, what would I have to do to be at that level? When I hear Jordan Peterson talk, I think about the years of study he must have put in. And I think about all the things that he must have read and all the hours that he's put in clinically. And that appeals to me. Why? Because I'm a learner. That's my number one strength is being a learner. And I value information and I value the process of learning and expertise. And so I just had this aha moment of being like, man, you know, That explains a lot of how I bring value, using my learner, using the things that I have, using me as a connector, as a person who just loves being around people. But like, you know, it was a real kind of takeaway for me, because you talk so much about how excellence is a way you bring value. For me, it showed me that how I see that in you in small ways. So I hope if you're out there, what I would say, the lesson is pay attention to what you're attracted to, because what you're attracted to is not just an indication of things that you value, it's also how you can bring value to other people. If you notice these things, like if there's just certain things that stick out to you, that's an indicator. Like, this is a way that you can add value in other situations.
And that's where it is. It's a part of my values, because it's the things that I'm attracted to. Right? I like those things, but I don't have to have those things.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't find my identity in those things. I don't need them in any way, but I really appreciate them.
Yes.
And the things that you appreciate are probably a reflection of your values.
Right.
Right? Like, we all like different things. Spend our money differently, spend our time differently, but the things that you give your time to, the things that you give your money to, are a reflection of your values.
Yeah. And while that's not a way that I add value naturally, it is a principle. And so, like, when Garrett's like, hey, this is an excellence, we need to do X, Y, Z, or he's like, hey, this would be excellent, I'm not like, well, hey, bro, that's not my value, because I know that excellence is a principle. What does it say in the Bible about excellence? Like, people
those
who are excellent,
who are faithful with little will become rulers of overmuch.
Right. And if you are excellent, there's always going to be a place for what you do. And so, like, when you're excellent, it applies to everything. You will excel, right? It's actually in the word, excellence. Boom.
Yeah. Look at that. And just to clarify, because I know it'll help Nick feel better, is that whenever I say that, whenever I'm saying that, you know, it's not Nick's value.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that Nick is an unexcellent person.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
Nick does things excellently. but it's not his number. It's not one of his top values. It's not one of his natural values.
Correct.
Nick has a lot of other great values that I don't have, but it's because it's mine and it's one of my top ones and it's not one of Nick's, right? I see it whenever Nick's not being an excellent, right? Compared to your average Joe, Nick is excellent or he wouldn't be my business partner.
Right.
Right. But because of the way that I am and what I bring, and I'm a huge stickler for it, it bothers me when things aren't excellent. Nick gets the brute end of that sometimes. Yeah,
it's joyful. And I appreciate you saying that. You didn't actually need to. I just like to give you a hard time. But for those out there, I really hope that you are like listening to that, because I think there's a huge value of self-discovery in that. When you start paying attention to the things that you're attracted to and understanding what's unique to you, this is part of you discovering the purpose of why your creator created you the way that you did. I mean, we joke around about, you know, I say to you, why are you the way that you are? Because Garrett has an opinion on everything. We joke about those things. But truly, that's what some of the uniqueness that makes Garrett who he is and a unique reflection of God, right? And every person listening to this has those exact, has not his exact characteristics, but will have things that God's uniquely put in you. And if you're just going by and not having takeaways and not being the type of person that's paying attention or reflecting to learn and from the stories that are happening around you all the time, you'll sit there and be like, well, I don't really know what I'm good at, or, you know, I don't know. And you won't be able to bring the value that you could.
You can have a, you know how when you give kids, like Elijah's at this age.
Yeah, my four-year-old.
If you give him a bat, like gave him an actual bat.
Oh, man.
Right? Yeah. He's dangerous with it.
He's very dangerous.
Not intentionally. Like, right. He doesn't want to hurt people, but just a lack of awareness of, like, he'd be holding the bat, swinging it around. Like, if you gave him a bat in Walmart, you know, you'd walk out with $1,000 bill for all the things that he broke.
Expensive trip.
Right. And when you don't really understand your values and you don't understand yourself, it's kind of the same way.
It's very good.
If I go back and look at some of my values, because I had them in a strong way as a kid, but I was very unaware of what my values were, of who I was. I had to learn EQ because I was a kid in a Walmart with a bat, right? Yeah. Like, I kept getting a bill that I couldn't pay relationally, and I had to learn my values because of that. But I say that to say, if you're a person who has those things, it's like, man, why do I rub people the wrong way?
Yeah.
Right? That's been an indicator of there's unique things about you, there's unique value that you have, and you don't know how to use it correctly.
Yeah, that's
right?
So
just know that you can turn that bat into a powerful tool, but until you do and you go through some of the difficult work of understanding yourself, understanding your values, you'll be the kid in Walmart with a bat just breaking stuff.
Dude, I don't understand why you have a better takeaway from my life story. Always ready. All right.
Always ready.
G, last story. And we head out to a area in Bud's second phase for pool comp, where you are one of the most experienced seals of pool comp.
I won't go too long on this story, but that is, it's not really a significant claim, but like Goggins talks about how he's been through Hell Week 3 times.
Yeah.
I got rolled for pool comp, did all 4 attempts. A lot of people will like fail attempts in pool comp. And like, I remember there are guys in my class that they were out of the water in 3 minutes.
Right.
It's just like you kind of lose yourself and make a bunch of mistakes and get booted out of the water pretty fast. My shortest pool comp, it's a test that when you pass, it takes between 18 and 20 minutes. And it's the entire time is pretty brutal.
Yeah. Right?
You're not comfortable. You're the opposite of comfortable the entire test. And my shortest test was 12 minutes and I did 8 tests.
Nice. Solid.
You get 4 tests in a class. And if you fail all 4 of those tests, you go to a disciplinary review board, a DRB. And you stand in front of a bunch of people who berate you and talk about all of your flaws and tell you everything that's wrong with you. It's a really fun experience.
Sounds like working with you at the Impossible Life.
And the difference is there's only one of me.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
That's true.
How about you sit in front of a panel of 6 of those people and they all just tear you apart? And then then you get 1 short opportunity to speak. You know, why do you belong here? And so I went to DRB, which was not a fun experience, and there were 15 people in my class that failed, and I think it was 6 or 7 of us. I'd have to go back and look at some photos, but I think it was 6 or 7 of us that they kept. They dropped the majority.
Right.
I was in the minority that they kept, and I was honest. I believed I was supposed to be there, but I was still surprised when I got kept.
Yeah.
Right. I thought, you know, I started thinking like, man, that's my story. Right. I got to go to the fleet for 2 years and come back.
Yeah.
Right. Cause I had resolved before they even dropped me. Before they even kept me, that if they did drop me, I would be back.
Right.
But anyway, so I got kept for pool comp And so in between classes, you've got like 3 to 4 months. And my class was over the winter break. So I had an extra long break before the next class came into second phase. And so you're in this rollback group of literally every day I would just go like get on the mats with our practice tanks and like go through all of my drills.
Right. So like you practice this thing for months.
Just practicing for months and months. It's like, okay, I know what I failed this time. And I failed. I'd have to go back and look at some of my old notes, but on my first class, 3 out of my 4 failures were twisted strap.
Right.
Not failing for anything major. A twisted strap is a minor infraction. You can have one of those, right, and still pass a test. But if you get 2 of them, it's a fail.
Right.
Almost any of the other infractions that you can have on the test are a major infraction.
Now, for those of us who haven't been through second phase, and even though I'm a plank owner on SEAL Team 9, I don't remember second phase pool comp. This is basically where they put you at the bottom of the pool and just beat you down, right?
I kind of rushed a little bit ahead there. I was going to get to it, but
sorry.
For what pool comp is, pool comp, short for pool competency, is a test. Hell Week is the difficult hurdle for first phase. There's difficult hurdles in every phase. In second phase, the hurdle is a pool competency test where you've got about 2 weeks of training where they teach you how to dive underwater. Right. And, you know, how to swim without a mask, how to recover your gear, how to fix issues in your gear. You go through all these like simple exercises where there's no instructors, there's no pressure. Right. And once you've learned all of the basics, they throw you into a nasty test where you'll practice all those things at once. And there's insane pressure. It's like, right. Oh, you can, you know, 1 + 1 = 3. I mean, 1 + 1 = 2. Sorry, my brain jumped straight to synergy. 1 + 1 = 2. Okay. Now here's a calculus problem for
right.
you.
Yeah.
Right. So that's essentially what pool comp is. The test will start, you're in 12 feet of water, and the entire time you're going to be breathing out of your rig, your oxygen system that they've given you. And the instructor will swim down to you at the bottom of the pool, a 12-foot pool, literally slam your head into the ground, rip your mask off, pull the air out of your mouth, right? Tie it in a bunch of knots behind you, turn your air off, and then like kick you and flip you across the pool for 30 or 40 seconds. And then as soon as they quit, like, you know, hassling you, you just sit yourself up back onto your knees. You're supposed to be on your knees the entire test, on your knees, and then you begin to fix your gear, right? And so you're on a breath hold the entire time, and you try to fix it when it's on your back, and there's all these different knots and tests that they give you. Right, so you're trying to get the air hose off your back. You pull it over, try to take a breath out of it, which is fun when it's full of water and you know you're already on a breath hold. Try to take a breath out of it. Okay, then I gotta try to get the air on. Okay, there's a knot in my hose, so you'll feel part of the hose different than if you're a scuba diver listening to this. You're used to pressurized hoses. These are unpressurized hoses.
Oh wow!
So if you tie a knot in the hose, you'll feel part of the hose fill up with air, and the other part won't. You can't tie a knot in pressurized hoses.
Okay,
but in unpressurized hoses, just think like a. Like a water hose. You can tie a knot in it and then the water won't go through or right. The air won't go through. So anyways, that's pool comp. It's a nasty test. If you really want to just get a picture for it, go to YouTube and watch the Buds Class 234 documentary.
Yeah.
It's all on YouTube. Scrub to the middle of the documentary and watch the second phase portion.
And you said it's like guys drown all the time because like you fail Buds if you surface, right?
People have a different definition of drowning. Most people think drowning means you died.
Right.
Drowning just means that you went unconscious underwater from lack of air, right? And that doesn't kill you. What kills you is staying. Like if you held your breath until you passed out, as soon as you like within, you know, you take a breath, if you can actually do that, hold your breath until you pass out. If you did, unconsciously, you would take a breath, air would get back into your lungs, and you'd wake up after a few seconds.
Right.
It's the same thing if you're underwater. Underwater doesn't change that. But what happens is people go unconscious underwater and you stay underwater, then you die.
Right.
Right. In pool comp, they let you pass out underwater and then they just get you out of the water, slap you across the face, and you sit right up, spit water out of your lungs.
Wow.
Get back to it.
Yeah.
Right. And that never happened to me, but I watched it happen to many students in my class where you would, and you could hear it. You can't see it. They make you face away, but you can hear it. You'd hear a student get ripped, come up out of the water, but then you don't hear anything. You don't hear the student's voice. And
right.
you're kind of like, everyone's like, you know, on the edge of their seat. Like what's going to happen? And you'll hear the instructor slap a student. You'll hear them start yelling at them. And then 3 seconds, 5 seconds, 10 seconds later, you'll hear them spit up all this water and, you know, say, I feel fine, but they can barely say it. That like literally that's how trained you are. You'll wake up out of nearly dying and just, I feel, say, put your fingers together and say, I feel fine.
Wow. That's just, yeah. So that's a normal day at Bud's.
So that's pool comp. So I say that to say, wasn't the point of the story I was getting to, but that is pool comp. So I failed all four attempts on my first test and go to DRB. I get passed and they decide I'm worthy of a second try. So they send me back and I go to my second class. And you do two attempts on Friday, and then you go, if you fail, you go through the weekend. You have the weekend to practice, remediate, review video, and then test again on Monday. Well, I'm in my second class. I was like, all right, I'm going to pass first attempt, right? And because that's what you want to do. There's a very, very, very rare breed of student, SEAL student, that are, it's called first time every time.
Wow.
And there's one or two every class that every single event through SEAL training, they will pass on their first attempt. They never fail a run. You never fail the obstacle course. The biggest one to get this on is pool comp, where you pass on your first attempt. It's a very rare thing. There's one or two students who accomplish it in every Bud's class. But I was like, you know, obviously not my first attempt, but okay, I've already been through this before. Yeah. I'm going to get it on my first attempt, right? I was like trying to get in that mindset, get in that energy. I failed. Failed for twisted strap. The exact same thing that I had practiced over and over and over again. Obviously, I failed for this in remediation in my first class, but I'm like, I had 4 months to figure this out. I figured it out. And then you fail that first one for the same thing you failed 4 months ago for, and you start to think, what was the point of all of that? Have I learned anything? And I don't want to say that it rattled me, because I'm really good at like just resetting and killing the snowball, but I got back in the water and I failed for twisted strap again. And that was extremely frustrating. So I went into the weekend, and I was kind of in that whole weekend. And it was, I can't remember what the, it was Memorial Day.
Okay.
No, it wasn't Memorial Day. It was a spring holiday. But I can't remember what the spring holiday was, whatever's in February.
Like President's Day or something?
It was something like that. Yeah. And so we didn't have Monday. We didn't do it on Monday.
Oh, so you had an extra day to think about your mistakes.
So we didn't go back until Tuesday. And the reason, it's not like students get those holidays, but instructors do. Right. So if there's no instructors, there's no students. And so we didn't test that Monday. We tested on Tuesday. So I had all this extra time to think about it. And I went through remediation over the weekend, and I was trying to learn from my video, but it's just like, man, I've done the same thing I've been doing. What else do I need to do at this point? And I remember talking to one of my an instructor who's kind of like a fatherly voice and a friend of mine. He's a friend of mine today. And he was like, he reminded me, because he was one of the instructors who had failed me. And he would take the time to go out there with us on weekends. He just really cared. He's a good instructor. And he's like, man, you know how to do this. You just got to do it. And I remember talking to my dad the night before we went back into class. Because I was young. I still talk to my dad all the time. But I was, you know, 19 at this point. I'd talk to my dad as much as I could. And I remember talking to my dad, and I don't remember what my dad said to me, but I remember where I was. I remember having this phone call, and I remember getting off the call and just realizing, like, I'm supposed to be here, but I've got to make this happen. Like, I have to pass this test. I've got to quit screwing around. And it kind of occurred to me that, because in all of my tests, like what was crazy to me was I felt like I had a lot of confidence compared to other people, especially to my peers who had failed the test. They were so nervous. My peers who had failed, they were so nervous about failing again. I didn't feel that way. But here I am, the other students who had been rolled in my class, almost all of them had passed on Friday, right? There was only a couple of us that were rollbacks from the first class to still be here in this situation. And I still had all this confidence, and it made me think, like, what am I missing? What am I getting wrong? And as simple as it was, just failing for twisted strap, what I realized is that I had a little bit of, I wouldn't call it arrogance, but it was overconfidence that I was compensating for my weaknesses with my strengths. Mm. One of my natural strengths is that I stay calm under pressure, right? They teach that to us in SEAL training, but it's also one of my natural strengths, right? I had a father that demonstrated that to me, but I say that to say, I was overcompensating with my strengths and realizing this test was not this. The major part of the pool comp test is, can you stay calm under pressure?
Right.
But it's, can that's hell week is, do you have grit? Pool comp is, can you stay calm under pressure and can you stay calm under pressure and follow procedures?
attention to detail.
And I was passing 95% of the test. And this was not a test that they wanted 95, they wanted 100.
Right.
And so I was doing the difficult part and failing in the easy part. And no one was going to give me a pass for the things that I wasn't good at. And so I realized, like, man, that's what I have to focus on. I've got to focus on attention to detail here. So we go into Tuesday, right? So there's a holiday going to Tuesday, and I fail my third attempt. And
twisted strap again?
Twisted strap again.
Jeez.
And you think, like, how's that possible? Right? Because, and I was following the procedures. You're supposed to just run your hands all the way back to your tanks and feel for the twisted strap. And so we come into my fourth test, and I remember this test very vividly. I remember waiting, like, praying on the side of the pool deck, just saying, like, God, give me guidance. I, like, believing this was supposed to happen. So I get in the water. I'm doing my second test, and I remember I caught one of my twisted straps. I put my hands all the way back to, like I had done every time, to trace the straps forward for twisted strap, and I got all the way to where my hands, you have these checkpoints. It's like once you get to here, you have to move on to the next thing. And I was just about to hit it, and it was like, you know, the Holy Spirit leading me, my gut checking me. I was just about to hit it, and I stopped, and I went back and started over again and caught a twisted strap.
Oh, man.
It was like I'd reached for it and felt it, and nothing was there. And I had almost gone to the second step, and I reached back and put my hands as far to the tank as I could, and there it was, a twisted strap. And that was the test that I passed. And the lesson for me there, and I've kind of already talked about it, but the lesson there for me was I was trying to compensate for my weaknesses with my strengths. But sometimes there's a lesson that you have to learn, right? And this was a lesson that no one was, like, I had to want to learn this lesson. And this wasn't a lesson that people would give me a pass on. You get, like, if you have talent, if you have ability, if you have a certain type of energy, right? There's a lot of things in life that people value highly, and you'll get a pass for some stuff in your life. And I'm so grateful for SEAL training, because this was a place that you couldn't get a pass, right? And they forced me to learn attention to detail.
That's so good, G. Man, I hope that everybody out there captures that. I know for me, like, when I think about strengths and weaknesses, one of my weaknesses is empathy. And, you know, that'd be kind of hard just be like, well, I'm really good at other stuff, so go ahead and give me a pass on being empathetic, you know, especially when you're dealing with people. So anyways, guys, I hope you go away. You have some takeaways. Think about the stories in your life. Think about the events. There's lessons to be learned that wisdom can multiply your days. So I hope you enjoyed that. Three lessons, three stories. We'll see you all again soon. Thank you very much for listening, guys. Remember to share, like, subscribe. If you think that this would be something that someone would enjoy, please send it to them. We appreciate it all. If you want to get in touch, you can follow us on Instagram at The Impossible Life. You'll find us on there. You can also email at impossiblelifepodcast@gmail.com. If you have any questions, if you want to get in touch and find out about Garrett's personal or business coaching, that's the way to do it. Thank you again for listening. Go out there, think better, and live the impossible. See you again soon. Long before ice baths were a thing, Garrett was doing them in the SEAL teams. Now we do them as part of our daily morning routine to make us better. We are very pleased to have partnered with Freedom Plunge. Freedom Plunge is on a mission to bring cold exposure to everyone. They believe that cold plungers should be affordable, easy to use, and represent the customer themselves. Cold plunges shouldn't cost a fortune, and these ones don't. Garrett and I both use our Freedom Cold Plunge every single day. It's customized. You can put whatever you want on them. For us, we have our Impossible Life logos. And here's the best part. Just for listening to this podcast, you can go to freedomplunge.com, use the discount code IMPOSSIBLE, and save $500 off any Freedom Plunge. These things are half the price of the ones that you see on the internet, plus you're going to save an additional $500 with code IMPOSSIBLE. Go to freedomplunge.com and get yourself one now. You will not regret it.